This interview is brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. You can check out the full episode at lickinonlending.com.
Matt Graham is here, and you can sign up for the MBSLive.net, get the extended trial period by putting in LOL for Lickin' on Lending. Matt, good to have you here.
Yeah, there's a few things going on in the market past week or so. An interesting move in bonds here and there. Maybe a little bit bigger than it has been. Seriously, though, it's been ridiculous. Ever since CPI and Bullard's comments 2 weeks ago, and then the day after that was when the Ukraine headlines intensified, and it has been nonstop. Back and forth volatility and a lot of confusion and a lot of questions about why things are happening the way they are. But in general, I think it's fairly logical in the sense that we have a major geopolitical conflict and the bond market responding to that in a logical way. I think the bigger questions come into play when we talk about what's going to happen next, what are the ifs and thens, what sort of lasting impact this could have in financial markets. And on that note, my analysis or my take or my opinion really would continue to be what it was before this flared up, which is that in the big picture, longer term, unless something more catastrophic happens, this is temporary volatility for the bond market. Now, if sanctions get onerous enough and the EU and the US fully pull the trigger on banning Russia from SWIFT, and they've already banned certain central bank transactions, it's hard to keep up with everything that's going on with all of the sanctions and all of the responses from the international community. But the proof is in the pudding. What happens to the Russian economy and its interactions with the global economy afterward? I think that most trade desks see a hit to global GDP as a result. That's generally bond market positive and inflation negative. But then there's an inflation component too because of oil. And I think that was one of our first yabbas that we discussed on this podcast. Yeah. And there has definitely been a response in oil, but it hasn't been really, really scary. In fact, oil was higher last week and it's still high, still elevated, $95 to $99 a barrel, but it hasn't been skyrocketing. So I think given the fact that a lot of that, the highness or the level of that price is currently accounting for a lot of uncertainty with this conflict, I think if it were to be over today, that price would come down. But it seems like the average opinion among people who know more about energy than I do would seem to suggest it puts upward pressure on oil prices. Not great for inflation, not great for bonds. The bond market is pricing in more market-based inflation. And that's derived from Treasury inflation protected securities yield minus 10-year Treasury yield. That number is higher than it's been in 2 months. And that had interestingly been fairly low relative to the past few months. It was fairly low in recent weeks, surprisingly so when things like CPI were moving the market so much. In any event, a lot left to play out. So there are several different outcomes here. We don't know which one we're going to get necessarily, but whichever one we get, it's going to have a big effect on how much the geopolitical situation is going to matter. And let's hope we get one that doesn't help rates too much, because those are pretty ugly for the world. But how much are they helping rates? Not as much as we might hope, but they have definitely put a ceiling in as of 2 weeks ago, and a little bit more improvement this morning. Mortgage lenders have been very hesitant because of the spread situation and the uncertainty. We don't like to have big volatile moves accounting for gains. It's not a comfortable thing to base rate sheets on. And then beyond that, MBS spreads have just blown way out since the Fed started talking about more aggressive normalization. And the other component of that is the yield flattening. So 2-year Treasury yields becoming more like 10 and 30-year yields due to Fed rate hike expectations. And then if we consider that rates above 4% are ripe for refinancing in the event that rates fall below 4% by any reasonable amount in the next 5 years, that means MBS durations, the average lifespan of a mortgage-backed security, is much shorter now than it was when rates were lower and when those loans were being originated in the upper 2% to mid 3% range. So faster speeds, shorter duration, and then match that up against the treasury market where the shorter duration treasuries are doing much worse than longer duration treasuries. And that gives us another reason for MBS underperformance. And then again, just to circle back to volatility, MBS don't like volatility. They will gradually narrow to their best spreads if the bond market is stable. So when the bond market's going crazy, it's another complicating factor. And that's why on several occasions last week, we didn't see rate sheets really improve very much, even though like 10-year treasury yields had dropped quite a bit. Looking a bit better this morning, but if the Ukraine situation comes to some sort of amenable conclusion, or at least a shifting of the gears, then who knows how much of these gains will remain. Economic data, just a quick reminder, we do a Powell testimony on Wednesday and Thursday this week. This is scheduled semi-annual congressional testimony. House, I believe, on Wednesday, Senate on Thursday, 10 a.m. Eastern time. Those can be market movers. He'll clarify probably the 50 basis point hike stuff. That is completely out the window. Not that it was ever a huge likelihood in my mind, but the market for a few hours thought it was. And then jobs report Friday, obviously, we had talked about that maybe not being as much of a market mover just before it really made a big difference last month. So I wouldn't rule out the jobs report as a market mover, even if it's just because traders are used to making big moves on jobs day. And that's going to do it. We're just watching technical levels, going to see if the market gives us an indication that it's game on. But even if it is game on, we have to worry or wonder that it could be game off if things change on the geopolitical stage. Mm. That's all I got for this week, Dave.
That's what you got. Well, Jack, let's jump you in here.
I do have a question for Matt. David, we could spend the rest of the day unpacking the conflict in the Ukraine. But Matt, the one thing that I haven't been able to really get my arms around is the SWIFT sanctions. It seems like NATO, the United States, have been very obscure with exactly what sanctions have been imposed. Banks haven't been named, the banks that were included in the SWIFT sanctions. And clearly, this does not close commerce off, right? I mean, we've got oil flowing into the United States, and Russia and the Ukraine constitute 29% of the world's grain exports. Certainly, the Ukraine's not exporting grain right now because their ports are closed. But have you been able to really unravel which Russian banks are involved in the current version of the SWIFT sanctions and what that really means to global commerce, or at least commerce traded by Russia globally?
I mean, I wish I knew anything about any of that, because like you said, the SWIFT sanctions have been pretty obscure, and even making sense of exactly what the implications would be are tough for somebody that isn't in international clearing. And that is a realm that very few people are experts in, and even fewer that are talking about it on TV or online. What we do know is that SWIFT is like the PayPal of the world, and there is no Venmo in that world. And so it would greatly decrease the ability for companies that bank with different banks to exchange money securely with one another for any number of transactions. It's not that there aren't workarounds. It's just that this is such a ubiquitous system that cutting off access, commerce definitely takes a hit. And we haven't seen any huge consequences of that so far. And as far as I understand, most recently this morning, we have some quote unquote targeted SWIFT sanctions, but nothing that, you know, completely blocks the entire country or every bank in Russia. But definitely sanctions, they're more onerous than they had been in 2014. And obviously, Russian currency is definitely showing that. It's kind of striking to consider that the ruble was around 30 ruble to the dollar for the 2014 Ukraine situation. Then after those sanctions, it doubled to about 60. And then it was as high as 100 last night. And now I think around 90. I haven't looked in the last few minutes. But so it's devalued threefold in the past 8 years, a crazy move, and 30% of that in the past week. So that has complications. Russia's a big component of the global economy, not a huge per capita component, but it's a big place. So, yeah. You know,
especially with oil, biggest import. Oil,
I mean, there's
us.
A lot of talk going on about oil. That's a huge problem for Europe, not as much for the U.S. We don't import a lot. U.S. is the number one petroleum producer right now, and thankfully so. But Germany, there's a sticky situation there, and we definitely saw an inflation pop in German inflation expectations when this whole thing started. So that is something to keep an eye on, since Germany is basically the EU when it comes to markets, since it's such a big part of the Euro economy.
Yeah, great stuff. You always bring such good perspective. Great question, Jack.
I've been reading and digging, and I just haven't been able to really get any clarity on it. And so you just kind of reinforced the fact that I didn't miss something in my research.
No, yeah, definitely.
You didn't. I was looking at that too. My wife was asking more about the SWIFT banking. So I got it because we wire money back and forth overseas, and so we got then familiar with it. But the inner workings and what this means and the complications it brings and how the implications interest rates is not a direct correlation. It's not obvious. Thanks, Matt. Appreciate you so much for being here. Next week, we've got Chris Zingo from Finastra, again, the largest fintech company in the world. We're privileged to have him as a sponsor, one of our anchor sponsors for many, many years. We're thrilled to have him there. But we're going to be talking with Chris about what he's seeing going on. Again, I'm joining the Finastra team down in San Antonio here this afternoon for the Independent Community Bankers Association, ICBA's lending conference that's going on down there. So for those of you listening, we'll look forward to seeing you there. And we're so grateful or Finastra, and looking forward to hearing Chris's comments next week. Say a special thank you to all of our sponsors, Finastra, Lenders One, Mobility MMI, Modex, the MBA, Knowledge Coop, the Mortgage Cooperative, SnapDoc, Success Kit, Lender Toolkit, PennyMac, Total Expert, and Form Free. We're so grateful for you, Form Free, and all the innovation you're bringing to our industry. Have a great week, everybody. Forward to seeing you back here next week.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.